as U.S. automakers watch their sales rise. On today's show, we hear how the UAW is doing as Union President Dennis Williams is our guest on Autoline this week. And now, here's your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on Autoline this week, where we're going to be talking about the state of organized labor in the American automotive industry. Where does it stand right now today, and compared to especially 8 years ago during the big collapse? And we've got somebody who really knows this cold, because he is the president of the United Auto Workers. Dennis Williams, thanks so much for joining us on Autoline this week. Also joining us today, Brent Snavely from the Detroit Free Press and Mike Whalen from the Detroit News. And great having you guys on board as well.
Thanks,
good to be here.
Dennis, we got a million questions to ask you here. Let's start with the VEBA. And this was, of course, all the health care costs that were wrapped up by GM, Ford, and then Chrysler, right, and handed to the UAW with billions and billions of dollars and say, here, you guys take care of the health care costs. I'm curious how it stands today. And one of the reasons I ask this is, if you look at a bunch of other corporations, even states and municipalities, counties, they face much the same problem. So how's the VEBA doing?
You know, the VEBA's doing very well. You know, when I think back when we first started the VEBA, we were about 73% funded, I believe. And today, anywhere from 95 to 105% funded.
So you guys have invested that money wisely.
We've restructured a lot. We thought through how best to deliver the kind of benefits that people who worked so hard for were promised. And we've kept that commitment, and we're very happy with the VEBA right now.
And in fact, the VEBA manages benefits for retirees, and it's done well enough that you've looked at times, potentially shifting active workers over into the VEBA. That didn't happen in the last round of contract talks. You think it ever will?
Well, the concept was never to shift active workers into the VEBA. The concept was to take the active workforce and use the VEBA's knowledge, along with the numbers of people in the active workforce, and collectively look at a way that you could leverage those numbers, as well as look at the structure of our healthcare. So our intent was never to merge them into the VEBA. It was the idea to bring it together.
And that was part of the healthcare pool that I know that was brought up during the last negotiations to actually get all three of the companies, so you have more of a buying power. Yeah. What went wrong with that? I know.
I take the blame for that. I mean, I had been talking to people inside, but not thinking that no one was talking to our membership. And, you know, as president of the union, I take that responsibility. We should have educated our membership more and better than what we did. The concept's still there. Concepts is still a good concept, and it would help us a great deal. But, you know, we've learned a lesson by that, and we're regrouping, and you got to educate your membership first, and I didn't do that.
The Detroit Three automakers also have pension liabilities, which they argue is holding down the price of their stock because Wall Street looks at this big liability in the future. Would you ever consider doing something along the lines that they did with their white-collar employees, where they sort of offloaded their pension costs?
Not under my term, we won't. Okay, for one thing, you know, I don't believe that's holding their stock prices down. I think there's much more than that. And the other thing is, you know, they're in a cash-positive position, and there's no need to look at that at this time.
Dan Eckerson, when he was CEO of GM, said that he would think about bringing that to the blue-collar workers when I think they're in the shareholder meeting. What would be so wrong with that to kind of...
Well, he had his opportunity. He was there, and he didn't do it. And so he probably rethought about it, you know, but I don't see a need for it. And I would really have to study something like that. Is it in the best interest of the membership, or does it really help both the members and position the company? Right now, I don't see no evidence of that, nor have I studied it either, to be honest with you. It hasn't been brought to me.
In the last round of contract negotiations, you more or less achieved the key goal, which was to find a pathway to eliminate the Tier 2 wages. Huge achievement. I'm wondering how you look at that contract now. It's almost a year later. How do you feel it positions the UAW for the future?
Well, first of all, you know, when you look at the contracts and the negotiations, they were contentious, without a doubt, right? I think that the second agreement at Chrysler ratified by 77%, I think General Motors 59%, and Ford, I believe, was 51 point something percent. So it isn't like it was huge margins right there. But you survey the membership today, and you know, now there's 20% dissatisfaction, right? Or, you know, and I doubt very seriously if 20% is dissatisfied with the finances of it. It might be something else. So from our membership standpoint, it positioned us very well, right? As far as for the UAW, I think it strengthened us. And in fact, we got more calls from the transnational plants that are unorganized because of that labor agreement than we had in many, many years. So overall, I think it turned out positive for everybody. There's a balance, right? You've got a balance between investment in the plants so our membership has jobs, and then you got to balance on how do you get them wage rates that are equal to everybody that works there doing the same work. So I think we found that balance, and but it took a lot of work, a lot of studying to do that.
You mentioned talks being contentious, and obviously...
Well, with both our membership and the company.
That's
right?
What I was going to say. I mean, it really seemed like there was almost a disconnect between the union leadership and the members. And I was down in Toledo when Norwood Jewell was down there giving the details of the first agreement because the FCA workers actually voted it down. And a lot of that contentiousness came from the skilled trades as well, who really thought that they could veto the contract completely if their bargaining unit turned it down. I mean, how, when you look back on that, could you have done something better to communicate with the workers and particularly the skilled trades, because they thought that they could veto the contracts, but then turned out that they just couldn't?
Well, the Constitution doesn't allow anybody just to veto a contract. Constitution, it's the overall vote that determines whether the common areas of the contract is ratified. Then you focus on the areas of skilled trades and then say, what is the problems in, within the skilled trades that you need to address? And I think we did that both at Chrysler and General Motors, and as well as Ford. So, you know, I don't know how they got that idea that they could veto it. That's not the design of our Constitution. As far as communications, I think that we all recognize that that first rollout was sloppily done. We all agree with that. Norwood would tell you we could have done a much better job, and I'm sure he has. And we all recognized our weaknesses in that area. And the other thing is, I think we got a little caught off guard from the percentage of people that were getting their information from social media or just talk. Although, I got to tell you, social media didn't play as big a role as we thought it did, because we studied it. So we got to get better at how we communicate with our members, and we're working on that even today.
Dennis, there's so much excitement in the automotive industry right now, a lot of uncertainty too. We're seeing massive changes in the industry, all this autonomous cars, this ride sharing, you know, car sharing and all coming in. What's your view of it? Because some people think that as cars get shared, we're not going to need as many cars, and that would absolutely have an impact on your membership.
Well, you know, I've heard a couple of different twists to this. Does it actually broaden the base of people that use the car? Now, the people that are elderly, can they actually drive longer? That's the other piece of it, right? So, we don't know what the impact's going to be, but it's here, and it's going to stay. It's not going to go away. So we're following it and measuring it, and I got research department looking at it and saying, okay, what is this going to impact us in the future? And does it really bring sales of automobiles down, or is it going to constantly just go up, or is it going to be leveled off? We don't know yet, but we're studying it. You have to. You can't ignore that.
Throughout the negotiations last year and as you look forward, you have to be paying careful attention to Mexico and investment in Mexico. So you were able to achieve a pathway to higher wages in the last round of contracts. Do you have any concern that you won't get as much investment as you hope for as the next couple years plays out?
I think we'll get a lot of, look, our plants are very productive. In fact, you know, if you look 10 years ago, we're actually 10% more productive than we were even 10 years ago. And that's a huge margin. And I think the investment will come. I think the company recognizes that we have a very skilled labor force. And we have products that American people want. And even in negotiations, as we are negotiating investment into our plans, we are looking at the future vehicles as well as the vehicles that are selling really hot today. And there has to be a balance, you know, of how you bring investment and what kind of investment you make, and is the workforce at a skilled level that is very skilled and high productivity, you know, that all counts. So I think there's going to be a lot of investment still here today. The problem we have with Mexico, there's so many problems there. The idea with the North American Free Trade Agreement was that not only were we going to have trading partners, we were going to have consumers. And what has not transpired is consumers in Mexico. They export vehicles from Mexico and they import them back into the United States. They don't really buy them. So until we have that reciprocal type of trade and that the Mexican worker, I think, makes in the auto industry $8 an hour, which is about 15% of what a United Auto Worker makes. And then if you look at parts, that's even worse. If you look at parts, the average parts a worker in the United States makes about $12 an hour. You know, and there's a $20 billion trade deficit or gap between Mexico and the United States. So it's huge, and it's a huge problem. And we're concerned about it.
Would it help if a certain candidate built a wall? Or completely
cut off NAFTA?
That damn
wall is not going to stop cars from coming over the border.
Or completely cut off ties. Well, Donald Trump has said that he would completely renegotiate NAFTA or even just cut ties completely. He hasn't really outlined how. But, I mean, it seems like that you guys are on the same sentiment regarding Mexico, at least.
Now, I think it was your paper that reported that Donald Trump also said here in Michigan that the way to do it is close plants here in Michigan and move them somewhere cheaper.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And then go ahead and make the workers take less money to build the same vehicles. That is not the kind of president I want. I want somebody that looks going to rise all tides, all boats.
Dennis, talk about your involvement in the election then, because, you know, it's astonishing to see Donald Trump's rise. He's defied all the experts who predicted he wouldn't even get to the New Hampshire primary. Now he's the Republican nominee. A lot of people think that he should have no chance whatsoever against Hillary Clinton. He very much does.
Well, sure.
What's the role that you're going to play, or your union's going to play in the election?
Well, right now we're putting together the information our membership need to make that educated decision. And I think once they see the difference between the two candidates, the records, the history behind the two candidates, they'll vote for Hillary Clinton. I watch with amazement like everybody else. As a president of the UAW, but also somebody who's been very involved in politics most of my adult life, I watch the Republican debates. I watch the Democratic debates, and I try to figure out the substance of the issues and the difference between the two parties, right? I couldn't do that with the Republicans this year. I mean, they talked about people's hands and talked about low energy and all this other stuff and never talked really about substance. And then I actually enjoyed the debates between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton because they talked about education, infrastructure, dollars about putting people back to work. So that was important to me, and I think it's important to our organization. So I was amazed that the Republicans ignored Donald Trump as long as they did. That was a huge mistake on their part.
But then it did seem like one of the big surprises when we spoke last, at least earlier this year, was that a certain percentage, I think it was 20% of UAW members,
28%
supported Donald Trump. You said you feel that numbers come down. I mean, he seems to be resonating with almost Reagan Democrat style, Reagan Republican kind of
style.
Well,
I would compare it to a Reagan style because if you remember right, when Ronald Reagan came in and the blue-collar worker actually went from Democrat to Republican, many of them, including our members, right, there was a Republican in the independents that went along with that. Mm. Trump don't have that. Republicans are not, a lot of them aren't voting for Donald Trump. Independents are not voting for Donald Trump right now. And our membership, when you look at it, our first surveys was during the primary, 28%. We then sampled by putting out a literature that on points, right, about each candidate, and that dropped to 19%. We just did a recent poll, and it's up again to 25%.
Really?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's about us educating our membership and giving them the tools to at least make the judgment. But he has not done any better than Romney or McCain did. So it's interesting, and we follow it a lot. In fact, I think I drive my staff nuts about it.
How much are you talking to other unions? Because it seems like the Trump's free trade NAFTA message resonates primarily with blue collar manufacturing workers. So I'm wondering if you're talking to, you know, Leo Girard at U.S. Steelworkers and coal miner unions, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think when you look at the steelworkers, and they've been hit very hard with the steel industry, and I haven't spoke to Leo lately or Cecil from the mine workers. I have spoke to Jim Hoffa and some of them. I think everybody's feeling the fact that, you know, there's a level of mistrust about government, no matter who you are or where you go. White collar, blue collar, educated, high school education, or it doesn't matter, right? There's a mistrust. So here we are in election time, and you're talking about to somebody that says, "Well, I'm gonna stop NAFTA." Well, I haven't seen a president that has the authority yet to stop a trade agreement once it's in place. I think what Hillary Clinton said was right, that there is provisions within NAFTA that need to be addressed and changed. That's correct. A president can make that happen with Congress behind him, right? So it's a matter about what are they saying and what is reality. Building a wall, can we build a wall? Absolutely. We can build anything, you name it. I mean, we've made airplanes and automobiles and put a person on the moon, right? So we can build a wall. Is it realistic? Probably not. Is it going to keep trade from happening? Absolutely not. You know, there's going to be gates to that wall. Yeah. So it's not going to affect trade. And then when you look at the statistics when it comes to immigrants, actually there's less immigrants coming in this country today, undocumented immigrants, than there has been for the last 10 years. So I'm not too sure if the rhetoric really measures up to the reality.
To follow up briefly on the some things connected to this, the wall and Mexico and free trade, you know, there's also Canada in North America,
yeah.
and Unifor is in the midst of contract talks or may wrap them up very soon. How do you watch and look at what Unifor is doing and the investments that they want to get? Do you view them as a competitor for North American investments or as an ally in the labor movement?
Well, both. Okay, I mean, Jerry and I met Sunday, had a long talk, and Jerry is a very skilled negotiator, just as the General Motors team is skilled negotiators, and I'm sure they'll work through it. Everybody, whether it's within the United States, Toyota, Honda, or any of them, they're all competitors, right? In General Motors, Ford and Chrysler compete against each other. We can compete against Canadian workers, right? But when it comes to organized labor and what we're trying to achieve to raise people's standard of living and give people dignity and safety in the workplace, we're all together, and we will continue to do that.
Dennis, there's an amazing thing going on in the American automotive industry right now. Whenever I go, I don't care which car company it is, whether it's the domestics or the imports, whether it's any of the supplier companies, everyone's complaining they cannot get the kind of skilled people that they need. I thought it was only engineers and no, it's absolutely as much of a problem on the factory floor. Yeah. What do we have to do to attract a new generation of workers who are willing to work in factories? And especially when it comes to skilled trades, which, as you know, right now, the United States faces a critical shortage of skilled tradespeople. These are some of the best paying factory jobs in the world. You can make a decent living doing this stuff. Yeah. And yet we cannot get people interested in taking those jobs. What's it take?
You know, I think right now there's a lot of people like Cindy Estrada, Jimmy Settles, and Norwood Jewell all addressing this by doing training programs and try to get people interested as well as skill levels up. But in reality, our education system has to change. We still have an education that was based off the family farmer, and that's not true today. You know, when you look at European and Asian style education programs, I think European style is probably the best way to go, where they have, actually, I think they graduate from high school at 16, actually, and then they either go vocational or the academic, right, field. And I think we got to take more of an interest in that. And years ago, when I, you know, I hired in 1977, and I think it was 1979 or 1980, we started vocational programs within our communities to train people how to be machinist or run a lathe or actually read a blueprint, you know. Today, that's not taught. Vocational's not in school anymore. So we have to get back to some pretty basics, as well advancement. Our education system, there's nothing wrong with our teachers. We got excellent teachers in this country. You got to give them the tools to teach, and you got to have the right curriculum to teach. And so I think we need to really think about this as not only as a community or a state, but as a nation. This is really important for all of us. And I think that people used to hire into the factories because that was a lifetime job. And over the years, people started saying you shouldn't be that loyal to companies, and you ought to think on a 5-year thought process, and I'm sure you've all heard it yourself, right? And my two children, I got a 37-year-old and a 40-year-old. They didn't think of work as lifetime or dedication. In fact, my oldest son and I had a conversation one time about, why, Dad, should I be dedicated to the company I work for? They're not dedicated to me. You know, that never used to be. When I worked for Case, I had pride in working for Case. I liked making that perfect weld. I liked the fact that my cylinder or that valve worked. And that's what we got to get back to.
What about perception? John mentioned autonomous vehicles and so-called disruptors coming in, whether it be Tesla, Google, or even Apple. Yeah. What about the perception of the auto industry, and I mean also the perception of the union workers? How can we actually change that, or does it need to change, in your opinion?
I think most of the companies recognize, as well as we do, that we hire these people in, but we don't ever explain to them where we were, where we are, and where we're going. And I think if you don't have engagement with your employees, and if we're not engaged with our UAW members explaining who we are and how our role plays representing them, we're missing a boat, and I think that's what's going on.
And you just mentioned Case, and I think a lot of viewers might think of the UAW as only representing auto workers. So I was wondering if you can touch on sort of, you know, your membership has declined for many years, but then in recent years has rebounded. So just give us an update of sort of where the UAW is going membership-wise, and then where things stand in Volkswagen with the effort with Chattanooga.
Sure. So we have about 143,000 of our members are in the auto sector, right? And if you break it down, we represent Case New Holland, we represent Caterpillar, we represent John Deere, Mack Truck, Freightliner, Navistar, Volvo, you know. So, and then from there, we have higher education, aerospace, and so we're very diversified. I mean, I could go on and on and on with the number of people that we, I probably missed somebody, so somebody's going to get mad.
Casinos.
Yeah, casinos is huge. Thank you. Now, you saved me getting left. The casino, and then when you look at our growth right now, we have organizing drives in several of the transplants right now. But our growth has been not only in the auto in the supplier network, right, the parts suppliers, but also growth in the casino and higher education. And we're growing about, I would say, between 3% and 4% annually, it looks like. So, you know, we're really diversified, we're growing in them sectors, and then when it comes to Volkswagen, we just won another court case, and they just did another appeal, and that's wrong with our system. I mean, this is the only place in the world, I think, well, that of a democracy, that actually you can win an election and never get to the bargaining table, you know. I imagine that would drive a congressman nuts if they got elected but couldn't get placed in Congress, you know. So we'll keep fighting it.
We're down to about the last minute or so, but there's a huge shift in the American market, right? In fact, it's a global shift. Mm-hmm. People getting out of passenger cars and getting into crossovers, SUVs, right, and the like. We're seeing a trend now of the automakers pushing all their passenger car production to Mexico. Yeah. What do you think of this trend, and how do you deal with it?
Well, if you look at the trend, though, if you look at the smaller crossovers, right, if you look at the size of the crossovers and the convenience of it, I think that is the direction that the American public is going. And the fuel efficiency is remarkable today, right? I know I just drove a truck, and I won't name what company's truck I drove, but it was 31 miles to the gallon. Hmm. Whoever thought that a truck would get that, right? So don't try to think of which one it is.
I know.
Okay. I think there will be passenger cars, but I think at a lower level than, you know, as far as sales goes, than there are crossovers. I think still SUVs, trucks, and crossovers is the market.
Yeah.
And it will be for some time.
Yeah. You know. Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap this up. Dennis Williams, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us. Been terrific. And I want to thank Brent and Mike here, too, for having joined in this discussion. And, of course, I want to thank all of you for having tuned in, and I hope you enjoyed this discussion as much as I did.